The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
The part where you say good morning.
Oh, that's right. Good morning, ready?
Ha, you have joined We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. And we have the Listen Live button up there that should connect you with the chat room. We've been having a little challenge with the chat room of late. Hopefully today, I don't know yet if it's going to work. If I sound a little dreamier than usual, it's because I have a face made for radio today. Suffered a little dog bite a couple days ago. Taking a lot of pain medication.
She's been a lot of fun.
It makes me a little, yeah.
Was it your dog?
Yeah. You're supposed to say, does you dig, bae?
Does you dig, bae?
Come on, there's so much good material for this.
That's how she said, your dog does not
dig
bite.
Is not bad. It's not my dog. It was Bill's dog. All the words I want to say about the dog are unfit for radio.
I've not been allowed to joke about the dog, so thank you, Bob.
You've been allowed to joke about the dog. I talked about, Bill asked me what I wanted for dinner. I told him I wanted soup made out of the dog. Oh, my God. Right in the bridge of my nose, right where my glasses go, you know? We had a whole bunch of his teeth pulled out, too.
It's a good thing.
Left the canines. Blow it. Yeah. Should have taken the rest. Oh, that's good. We have George Soros in the chat room. Okay. My day is complete.
Just to be clear, you had his teeth pulled out before he bit you?
Yeah. Oh. You know, because he had bad teeth. Mm. Obviously, he had bad teeth. He had teeth that were itching for my face. I was just petting him, too. It was really nothing all that exciting, you know. It didn't scare him. He wasn't falling off a building. I didn't.
He had a bad day. He had a lot worse day after he bit you. He rounded it out.
Oh, my God. Nothing like that. Hey, but you know, you haven't lived until you've been to your emergency room at, you know, 11:30 at night. You get to meet so many interesting people.
Oh, yeah.
They actually felt sorry for us, and they let us sit in a different waiting room. They said, after we went into, like, triage, you know, where you answer the same questions again, they said, you might be more comfortable in here. And it said, waiting room, but there was no one in it.
And later the comment was made that we were...
She goes, God,
people.
It's so great I got the normal people. By then, the blood was done running down my face, and, you know, I'm usually in pretty good humor even when I am bleeding from the nose.
It was an experience. We got to meet
that I'd like
kinds.
Not to have again.
Well, I wouldn't say we got to meet them, but we did get to mingle.
Oh, and then we got out, and there were massive gunshots over on Placer, I guess. There's some big, like, gunfight over there.
Yes, about 2 in the morning a couple of nights ago.
It was actually at 2:40 because we were leaving the emergency room at 2:50. And the guy said, whoa, you just missed the big gunfight. It's like, oh, my God, get me in the car. Let's go home.
That was exciting.
It was not awesome.
Yeah.
Well, you didn't jump in the car and go to Walmart at that point?
Yeah, no.
That's the best time of day, you know.
No, after they give you shots in the bridge of your nose, yeah, not on my list.
You're going home.
Yeah, not on my list. So, okay.
She had kind of a Klingon thing going on for
I did
a while.
Too.
It was very interesting.
I still have a Klingon thing going.
I was trying to teach her a little Klingon, but she wasn't in the mood.
I really wasn't. So, let's see. If you're going to call us today, which at this point might seem dangerous, we'll give you the phone number because we'll probably forget the rest of the time. But, hey, you know, you never can tell. We're kind of random there. It's 530-605-4567. And if you join us online, wethepeopleradio.us, I will be seeing the webpage for the first time right now because I couldn't check it earlier because, well, I couldn't see because I couldn't wear my glasses, you know. Hey, so far so good. And our guest said he sent us another PowerPoint, so we'll be replacing the PowerPoint. So at some point you might want to refresh your page, and that'll give you the new one. But we've got two guests today, and we're talking about Endangered Species Act stuff and Environmental Protection Agency and that sort of thing. And it's a two-week, we've got a little two-week plan for you.
Two-parter.
Yeah, two-parter. But we have Dr. Michael Kaufman on the second hour, and we have Rick Frost on the first hour. Then Rick Frost will be back with us next week. So if you feel like we ran out of time this hour, we're good, because we'll have next week to tidy up, you know. And he's got a really wide base of information. Let's see, he's listed as a natural resources consultant. That's good and comprehensive. I like it. And he's a specialist on policy and regulatory issues, and God knows we need lots of those on our side, you know, the people who still have common sense left and actually can read the law and know what it really means. So he's got all sorts of good information on the Wildlands Project, and, you know, you hear about these conservation easements all the time, and a lot of our farmers and ranchers are being strong-armed to put their property in conservation easements in order to hold on to them. We'll be talking about how that really works out and what that's all part of. Do we have to take a really quick break before we start with him, or did we already do that since I can't see the clock?
How many fingers?
We have him on the line if you'd like to say good morning to him.
Oh, hi. No. Mr. Frost, are you hiding in there?
Oh, good morning, everybody.
Hello.
Good morning.
Well,
on your side of the hill.
What?
How's the weather on your side of the hill?
I don't know. I've mostly been looking at the inside of my eyelids, so.
It's sunny and warm, and lots of fake clouds out there this morning.
Lots of fake clouds. What's that?
Oh, but to answer your first question, yes, we do need to take a break.
Okay. See, Bob can't send me smoke signals because I have my glasses down at the end of my nose, and I can only see what I'm exactly looking at down the end of my nose.
You're going for the Ben Franklin look.
Yeah, I am. I am, to eliminate the puffiness. Okay, so we'll take the balance of our really quick break. Then we're going to come back, and we're going to...
What did I ask you when you came in the front door?
You said, how was your trip to Lake Tahoe?
Right.
I said, it was fine until I got home.
And you said you had an issue, and I looked at your face, and I said, oh, your allergies acting up?
Yeah, your allergies acting up. Yeah, my allergies came with a...
You should give everybody the visual.
My allergies came with a canine this time.
We have very slitty eyes. Actually, they're much better than they were before. It looks like maybe I'm an abuser, but I swear it wasn't me.
I told Bill, if he isn't good, I'll go to church today.
I know, and
look sad.
I'm not allowing her out in public, because I know I'm
sad.
In for it. So,
all right, hit
turns
the button.
Out she's allergic to dog bites.
Yes,
I am allergic to dog bites. I'm allergic to bleeding from the face. And all those movies, they're totally fake. Those guys, they get stabbed in the face and they keep running. Yeah, that's a huge lie. Giant lie. All right, we're going to come back with you in just, I don't know, some short period of time. And
just hang in there, Mr. Frost, and we will be right back.
Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We'll check out the chat room. About them. When they move into your neighborhood, they take over but good. They want you all body and soul. The bird of paradise couldn't fit up my nose.
I have a feeling Bob's going to have fun today.
Only the nose knows.
Ay, ay, ay.
God. Yeah, we had, let's see, who let the dogs out. We've got a lot going on in the chat room. Today it'd be worth plugging in on the chat room. Okay, so now we've determined that's the last time I yell, bite me.
Not something you want to say to a dog.
Nah, Mr. Frost, honestly, bring us down, make us sad. Talk about I don't know, any of the things that are on your list.
Oh, I see it. I'm the downer of the show.
Oh no!
Your resume's too long to read. At the end of the day, these guys have all gone crazy, and we kind of already know that. And their plan is to ruin our lives.
Yeah. No. Short story. I spent about 15 years as an economic and environmental policy analyst at the university. And my job was to evaluate impacts from environment programs and lawsuits, the impacts that would result in economic, cultural, and social type structures. And one of the things that we uncovered way back in the 90s was this plan to basically convert all the open raw lands that were pretty much farm and ranch lands of the West into a connected corridor program. I was totally unaware of Dr. Kaufman at the time, and so this was a study that we did independent of everybody else. And it turned out to be what most folks know today as the Wildlands Project. The Wildlands Project was conceived by Reed Noss and Dave Foreman and one other person, I think it's Michael Soule, I think. Anyhow, they conceived of this plan, and I attended the first flagship meeting of the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance. And in there, they explained the plan on how they're going to connect corridors of private land to the national parks and the forests and other open areas and eventually regulate people's use off those lands so that they could go back to being totally wild. I did download a small PowerPoint or segments of PowerPoints that I have presented in the past on this issue. One of them is a picture of the actual original map. I think it's about the sixth slide in. In there, that is a picture that they posted in May of 1999 where they were showing right there against the Arizona and New Mexico border. There's some wildlands down there. In fact, the very first wilderness declared in the United States is the Gila Wilderness, and it's right up against the western New Mexico border. That is the large block of land at the top with that squared edge. That squared edge is the New Mexico-Arizona border. Anyhow, on it, they had identified ranches that they wanted for connections, and those were identified by the Orange Arrows. And they were talking about how they were going to use conservation easements to sell the idea to these people to set their properties aside that would never be developed. What they don't know is the fine points of conservation easements is that they allow habitat restrictions to be imposed at some point into the future. And this was craftily designed into conservation easements with the intent of some point shutting the people off.
Just for people that are like, what are they talking about? Go to the webpage, wethepeopleradio.us, a tiny way down just under Rick Frost's picture. It says click to launch PowerPoint on Wildlands Project, and then it also says or click to view our slideshow. My guess is Robert put it in there two different ways in case you didn't have a program to open it. If you're just listening while you're driving or something, when you go home, click on this thing, because this is 1995 National Wilderness Institute with a howling wolf on it, classic, as the logo. But it shows the state. Hold on here. Let me be accurate. It shows all the land managed by the state and the federal government, and it's broken down into all the little tiny sections, state parks, wildlife refuge, state forest, BLM, USDA, National Park Service, Army Corps. And I think sometimes we don't realize how many different people we have with their mitts on our land, I guess, if you will. So go there. That's what we're talking about. Party on, Garth.
Well, what's interesting is that, you know, look, going to that very first slide that you mentioned that was produced by the National Wilderness Institute, that map actually captures the big problem of ideology in our land regulations here in the United States. As you'll notice, right down the center going towards the east, the largely Everything is held in private property, which is all white, and everything to the west of center is largely held by some government function, some government agency. That line down the center is what's known as the 100th meridian, and what happened was back in 1845 with the Mexican-American War that was resolved in 1846, that is the dividing line defined by the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo and Kearney's Code. Because what happened is that all of the lands in the west were pretty much under Spanish or Mexican rule. And with the War of 1845, we had a lot of Mexican residents that now, through no fault of their own, were suddenly American residents. But their rule of law when it came to land and forage and water and natural resources is different than the English system. The Spaniards, the Mexican rule, has what's known as beneficial use and prior appropriation. And these people wanted that structure to be left in place because the English system is known as riparian law, and it has huge structural differences than the Spanish prior appropriation law. So the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo was passed to ensure that all the lands of the West remain under Spanish prior appropriation. That becomes a headache for the bureaucrats in Washington, D.C., and those that want to extend English riparian benefits onto Western lands, because private property is the dominant sole structure of Spanish prior appropriation that is precedent to government lands. And that has all kinds of implications and such. And that has basically been the heart of the fight for water and endangered species issues and this wildlands issue. Because even Dave Foreman himself, Dave Foreman, if you all may know, is the founder of the philosophy of Earth First, which became a movement that was running all over the West, especially the Northwest, tearing up any equipment and business enterprises based on natural resource economics. Dave Foreman is one of the three founders of the Wildlands Project concept, along with Reed Noss and Michael Soule. And Dave Foreman was also on the board of directors for the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance, and was for quite some time. So he's even been quoted in his work that the conservation easements are at the core of what is needed at the Wildlands Project, because this is the only way that they can voluntarily get people to sign over their property rights to a land trust or another entity and basically give away the farm, give away all of the business collateral, give away all of the control of the land. Now, they tell people, well, we're doing this to protect agriculture, when in reality they're doing it to create more open spaces and to take agriculture out of production. And there's a few slides that I have included in my PowerPoint where Dave Foreman himself is quoted in different literatures where he's describing that these conservation easements are at the core of the Wildlands Project, because they want people to go under the illusion, oh yes, we're going to protect your estate, we're going to give you tax incentives to turn your lands over to us voluntarily so that your inheritance doesn't diminish, this always stays in agriculture, and then the unknowing heirs and other purchasers of the land down the road, they're not aware of these restrictions that have been imposed on there.
So when you say take the land out of agricultural production, how do they turn around then and justify that?
They justify this by saying that the wildlands, these animals inside the wildlands, they need to be reconnected so that they can wander freely back and forth. And it's basically an anti-human philosophy. Under the wildlands, they want to get rid of the roads, they want to get rid of the plowed lands, they want to get rid of any signature of human presence whatsoever, whether it be a mine, a ranch, a farm, even towns, even rural communities. They have plans to go in there and basically bulldoze them and yank out the concrete once the towns have been economically knocked off the map, so to speak.
And so then once we have all this ag land turned back to nature so the animals can roam free, where do they think our food's going to come from?
They don't really think about that. That would require, like, actual logic.
Well, part of their philosophy is that humans are seen as a bacteria on the earth.
Mm.
And so part of this wildlands philosophy is to force humans into little islands of occupation where we can function, but this also includes a massive reduction in the population. If you get further into their literature, you will find that they see that this planet should not have more than 7 billion people total. And we are well past that point. So they're actually seeing that the population over time is going to be severely reduced from what it currently is today. And so, therefore, if you reduce the amount of mouths to feed, you're going to, in their mind, and, of course, anyone else's mind, reduce the amount of food that's needed to feed these people.
Hmm. Well, that totally makes sense now. I understand.
Hey, yeah.
We're just a scourge on the planet. We need to get back in check.
One concept I've always had on that line is that, well, if you folks really and truly believe that humans are the problem, please establish precedent, establish the rules, set the way, and lead the way out first, please, by all means.
Well, even at that wolf listing meeting, the California endangered... I'm going jumble. You know, what do you call it? The Fish and Game Commission. Thanks for helping me, guys.
Yeah.
Tie another brick to my foot. I'll swim just fine. Phil's looking at me like...
I don't know.
Stop looking at me.
With one eye.
Yeah, stop it. The Wolf Commission, and a girl got up there, and she was, I don't know, mid-20s, not much older than that. And she, I wish I had it on tape or something, but she actually said that she's just praying that they list the wolf because it's time that we stopped considering man as the most important thing. It's time we got our priorities in order. Like, what?
Excuse me?
Yeah. So, I mean, this, and she's a college student, of course, at a school I used to attend over there, Humboldt State, and that I do not contribute to as an alumni, because they've obviously gone insane. So, yeah, that's what they're learning over there and promoting. Fabulous.
Yeah, I think they're smoking too much of their own crop over there.
Exactly.
Agriculture over there is alive and well.
Well, you know, when you think people are the, I mean, literally, that people are the problem and you need to get rid of a bunch of them, I think we've had a lot of leaders over time that have done that. Let's see. We have time to contemplate, actually. Bob's giving me the high sign. He has to give it to me low so I can see it. But I did see it. Be right back with you in 2 minutes. Sorry, little scramble we're having this morning. We'll continue. Thank God for Rick. Only sensible person in here.
KCNR 1460. We'll be right back.
You got to change, baby. And every word that I say is true. You got me running and hiding all over town. You got me sneaking and peeking and running around. This can't go on. Lord knows you got to change.
Bob plays these songs just to make us angry.
To get our blood
don't
flowing.
Bob?
Exactly.
All right.
So,
back with Rick Frost.
Getting back to the whole land trust issue, Rick, let's talk a little bit more about the downside to that whole thing. Because I know there's a lot of people out there that think the land trust issue is the way to go. I mean, it just makes so much more sense.
Well, the problem with land trust is, number one, they are a nonprofit, which, of course, anybody can be. They do their P's and Q's rights. But what they do is that they basically take control of the land by having either the conservation easement, which is the development rights, the collateral in the land, purchase or acquire control of these development rights away from the landowner. And so, therefore, any project that goes forward has to get approval of the land trust. And these are voluntary agreements that the landowners are talked into. So if a landowner wants to try to do a range improvement or a farm improvement, something like that, or even a building improvement to their agricultural buildings, they have to go before this land trust to get permission. If they don't agree with it, they've got no recourse. If they try to take them to court, for example, to fight this disagreement, then not only can the judge turn around and sit there and look, well, you signed this voluntary condition of restriction on your property, on your business, in essence, and so therefore you voluntarily accepted the terms and conditions. And oh, by the way, in the fine print of that conservation easement you signed, it says that if the land trust has to go to court on your property for any reason, including you, then you, the landowner, have to pay for all of the land trust court costs, even if you win in court.
That's sweet.
And so there's some little hidden things in there that people just don't understand when it comes to those things. And also what happens is that these non-profit, non-tax-paying entities are taking productive lands out of the economy. And so it reduces the amount of natural resource economics that comes from land. The other burden that happens is called, where they basically impose the burden of non-taxable land onto those that have taxable land. It's called a disproportionate burden. What I mean by that is that as a community grows, you're going to have infrastructure needs. You're going to have schools, you're going to have police, fire, sewer lines, water lines, roads. All these infrastructure things that support communities are paid for with property taxes. Now, if you start taking lands out of production and imposing artificial restrictions on them by, one, taking the development value away from the land and the collateral away from the land, and you're giving it to an entity that produces no property taxes because they're tax exempt, well, as the infrastructure needs increase, all those taxable entities that are not impugned with this regulatory burden, they pick up the difference. And so the surrounding property owners get to pick up the difference that is not covered by the land that has imposed restrictions.
Well, you know, Rick, to give you an example, I have a relative that worked for a division of California Fish and Game that their job was to go out and purchase land under the wetlands conservation issue, and they would actually go out to landowners, offer them above market value price for that land because it was state money and they could
sure.
do that.
They have our checkbook using our tax
right.
dollars.
Right, and the first thing with that is the surrounding landowners never had an opportunity to buy that land because it wasn't for sale. But they come in, they offer the landowner a sweet price on the land. He'd be an idiot not to take it. And so he sells the land. Now, he's allowed to continue, at least for now, to grow his crop. And in many of the cases, it was rice land. But then once that rice crop came off, that was turned over and managed by these conservation groups. And the first thing they did was they put up no trespassing signs, so the public did not have access to that land, which we paid for. The second thing is exactly what you're talking about. That land is actually owned now by the state of California, managed by the environmental group, and it's off the tax rolls. So that tax money now has to be made up somewhere, and where do you think that's going to come from? So that whole program, and that's been going on for, I mean, years and years, if not decades.
When did they start?
Oh, it started...
No, I bet Rick actually knows. When did they start doing that?
What, conservation easements?
Yeah.
They've been around since the colonial days.
Well, these weren't actually easements. They actually bought the land. I mean, the state of California owns that land now.
Yeah, but yeah, and what happened is that there was a time back, there's the Conservation Easement Act that was, it was a national act, and I'd have to go back and look, but it was something passed, I'm going to say back in the 70s, and this was done by the Land Trust Alliance. And what the Land Trust Alliance did, this was at a meeting, I believe it was in New Orleans at the time, they took this Conservation Easement Act, and they went state by state with their grassroots people to get the state legislatures to adopt this act as their state's Conservation Easement Act. So this is not a federal act, this is a state level act.
Right.
When California got their hands on it, not only did they embrace this Conservation Easement Act, they actually wrote into their language that they expect that the justices, when proceeding forward on any lawsuit stemming from this Conservation Easement Act, that the justices will weigh with prejudice on the side of conservation in disfavor to the landowner. And that's written into your state's language that way. And the other thing that is the kicker, Colorado so far is the only state that's refused to do this, but there is this clause in this act called the Third Party Rights of Enforcement. And what this means is that if you have a Conservation Easement Act on your property, and I'm from New Jersey, and I think that you have, the landowner, has not held up to the terms and condition of the habitat, I can take you to court and sue you for not enforcing your habitat restrictions. That's what third-party rights of enforcement is all about, and California supports that also with vigor. Now, when it came to this habitat thing, when the states were taking stuff over, what people don't realize is that when they take it over, they're creating a nexus with the state. It's either a federal or a state nexus, depending on where the funding source comes from to purchase that land. What this means is that the government now has full-blown control over all the habitat and management restrictions. If let's say a land trust uses state or federal funding to purchase the conservation easement in any portion whatsoever, that also creates government nexus on private property, giving the government a backdoor way into controlling property without having to use eminent domain or condemnation. Why? Because the landowner gave it up voluntarily.
Exactly.
And therefore, they sidestep a whole lot of regulations.
And, you know, now, we hear a lot of folks saying, geez, you know, the state's going to come in. They're going to give me money to help me manage this land. It's going to be a great partnership. It's not a partnership. It's a takeover. And eventually, they'll have no say-so in the management of that property.
Hey, Rick, because one of the slides in your PowerPoint there is a quote from Dave Foreman, and it says, if we identify a ranch that's between two wilderness reserves and we feel it will be necessary as a corridor, we can say to the rancher, we don't want you to give up your ranch now, but let's put a conservation easement on it. Let's work out the tax details so you can donate in your will to this reserve system. And you have that listed as Dave Foreman from Listening to the Land by Sierra Club Books. When was that?
This would have been back in the 90s.
Okay,
When everyone was trying to understand what the Wildlands Project was about, because Reed Moss and Dave Foreman put this whole thing together, that was back when they were trying to explain to everybody the concepts behind the structures on how they're going to adapt existing law practices with the land, readopt them, repurpose them for the outcome of this Wildlands Project. Now, what's interesting is that this is exactly how Reed Moss explained to the United Nations the whole Wildlands Project, because they wanted to expand this to a global type of a thing. And so through Reed Moss's work, based off of this theology core concept here as to how they're going to apply land laws. They turn around and made the wildlands the heart of the IPCC project and all the biosphere projects at the UN level. So this is where Reed Moss came in. This also became part of BEC, the Border Environmental Economic Cooperation or Conserve, whatever that thing was called when they imposed that on that range on our borders. It became part of the biosphere projects that came out of Rio de Janeiro and everywhere else. Now, what's even more interesting is all of these concepts as the mechanism on how they get people to join in on this thing. And in the case of California, it has evolved to the point that the Wildlands Project is now at the heart of Caltrans. I was researching this, and just a couple of months ago, I uncovered the Caltrans, it's called the Essential Habitat Connectivity Project. And in there, I have copied their map straight from their literature. And the replacement slide I sent has the correct addresses and things on there. I don't know if it's made it up to the web yet or not, but it's coming. Anyhow, there's three websites in there where you can go and anyone can research this stuff. What's interesting is that if you go into that book and research who is on the peer review of scientists on the board for this Caltrans project, you will find none other than Reed Moss. One of the key authors to the Wildlands Project is also one of the key peer review scientists for this Caltrans Essential Habitat Connectivity project.
Gosh, I feel so much better. At least it's being, you know, promoted by, you know, qualified people who have our best interest at heart.
Oh, absolutely.
Wow.
And the other thing it's a problem is that once these lands, going back to the habitat imposition you were referring to earlier, once the government has taken control and they are able to impose habitat restrictions on these lands where they can no longer grow the rice, they can also impose a habitat buffer on adjacent lands up to 10% the distance from the boundary as a buffer corridor, especially if the water comes off of the upstream lands onto the habitat-protected lands, they can impose greater restrictions on the upstream watersheds. And so this is why also a lot of conservation easements and key control points will be at the bottom of the watershed at the water outlet. And so there they can turn around and impose watershed restrictions further up the habitat on that issue. So once you've got the camel's nose in the tent, the camel comes in and kind of messes it up for everybody. And a lot of folks don't understand that long-term implication.
No, I don't think they do either. And a lot of those people, unfortunately, own some of this land. We have to take a really quick break. We're going to come back. We have Rich Marshall trapped on hold. He has a question for you or a comment. And we'll do all that somehow magically in the next 10 minutes. You're listening to KCNR 1460 AM, Shasta Redding. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Give me land, lots of land under starry skies above. Don't fence me in. Let me ride through the wide open country that I love. Don't fence me in. I should have left a long time ago. Who needs you? I've got Mexico.
Okay, let's come back with Rich Marshall, who's been patiently on hold. Mr. Marshall?
Yes, Aaron.
What have you got for us?
Well, I want to add, flesh out a little bit of that comment that's happening there that you're having about the conservation easements, which is an active element now in Siskiyou County. We've had a number of ranchers now with several thousands of acres that have been acquired up there with a conservation easement. One of the things I noted, I just attended a meeting in San Francisco where I was listening to people talk about the clean water bonds coming up, but I also noted in the previous ones that money is funneled from there into what they call habitat restoration, only that's just a euphemism for this ranch acquisition process. So you may want to add, Rick and Bill, to your information the following, that within the language of these clean water bonds, there is opportunity for California Fish and Game to basically bankroll money, which they then use to feed the Nature Conservancy as the frontline activity in acquiring these conservation easements. And then they come in the back door, the Fish and Game comes in the back door, and basically owns the land at the end of a five-year period. So that basically they are working undercover with taxpayer money to acquire these ranches under the guise of this conservation easement.
Hit it, Rick.
Well, that goes back to underscoring what I was saying about this nexus that
yes.
is created by using state and federal monies. That totally goes and underscores what I was trying to explain earlier, is how they use these land trusts and these environment groups as the front agency to come in and take control of the land without having to use eminent domain or any of those other legal structures under the 5th and 14th Amendments of our Constitution.
And for those people that think that, well, I don't know, they might be making all this up, go to the website, click on the PowerPoint here, and I don't know which slide it is, but you'll see it. It says Caltrans Wildland Project Goals, and you know, brought to you by the California Department of Transportation, California Department of Fish and Game, commissioned by the California Essential Habitat Connectivity Project, because a functional network of connected wildlands is essential to the continued support of California's diverse natural communities in the face of human development and climate change. Oh, let's just all admit it. We're all haters. And if you look at that map, it is literally the green version of the maps just prior, the wildlands maps that are red and yellow. These are green and white. Same map, same program. And the land they want to tie up just happens to exactly match, oh, say, the frog and toad listing down in the Central Valley on the eastern side of California. It's the same footprint.
Well, and the other thing, too, is that where Richard's at up there in Siskiyou County?
That is. Yes, Doug.
Yeah, you've got another situation going on. They've recently been dealing with some very aggressive environment groups to shut down all land uses, and it started with the dredging. They shut out the gold dredgers, and now they've got this, they're trying to shut down the irrigators using the status of a fish, the coho salmon.
Coho salmon, right.
Yeah, and they're trying to shut down their upstream spawning habitats to irrigation. Yet, at the same time, the very people that are promoting through litigation and other venues to shut down these resource users and economists, they are changing it for the economy of the marijuana production, because there was just wasn't there, Richard, just a recent report out by the state biologist, I think last February, where it said they determined that the amount of water being pulled, illegally pulled from these spawning habitats that is going to these illegal marijuana farms is draining the rivers dry. And so here, on one hand,
That's right.
They want to stop the resource economy of mining production and farming, and yet they want to turn around and use it to grow an illegal crop, a federally illegal crop, and they're using it by illegally diverting water. It doesn't even belong to them.
That's correct. So that's been happening actually for some time, I believe, but it just got reported. We also believe, many of us believe, that the reason all these forests have become off limits is also tied into this affiliation with marijuana growing, which takes place to a large degree in these Native American reservations up in these areas where the security is provided by the Native American groups.
Well, fellas, we've got a lot to talk about. Can we pick this up next week? We're going to add a little Dr. Kaufman to the balance of the 2 hours here, and then we're going to come back with Rick Frost. I'm sure, Rich, you've got other things to add from up in your area, and we'll be using roughly the same slides. We'll go through those some more next week. Fellas, it's been awesome.
Well, thank you for having me.
Thank you, Aaron.
We'll keep going. We'll get Dr. Kaufman's take on the EPA, and we'll be back with you guys next week, bright and early, 8 o'clock next Sunday morning here at We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Thanks, boys. We'll be back in a couple of minutes after the news. You've joined KCNR 1460 AM, Shasta Redding.